So the Israelite people had conquered the land and the people of Canaan, and so they were ready to take possession of the promised land, to live there. So they were, this was the wilderness people. They had lived in the desert, then they had overcome their enemies, and they were ready to be delivered and cross over into the promised land to take possession, the land of milk and honey. And so Joshua addresses them and basically invites them, well, more than invites them, asks them to make a commitment whether they're going to choose the Lord or choose other gods. And this happens in the city of Shechem, which is the place, it has very important religious significance. It's a place where Abraham's covenant was established. And then several other, let's see, the bones of, who was the man within in Egypt? Now I forgot the name. But his bones were buried there. And it was a holy place, holy ground. And so they're to commit themselves to the Lord again. And basically, in this covenant, if they follow the Lord and they're faithful to the Lord, they're going to receive blessing and abundance. If they are not faithful to the Lord and they choose other gods, they are not going to receive God's protection. They're not going to have security. Bad things are going to happen. So they have to make a choice. A good reflection on this passage and this experience of the Israelite people can be helpful, I think, for us to make a more fruitful confession, have a more fruitful experience of the sacrament of confession. Because it's one thing to go to confession, it's another thing to have a fruitful confession that has spiritual benefit for your soul. You can't just be a rote, well, I, you know, check that off, I went to confession. We're interested in a fruitful confession that brings about spiritual growth. We're interested in a fruitful reception of the Holy Eucharist, one that increases our spiritual growth, our interior life. And so what he lays down, what Joshua lays down, can be a guide for ourselves in making a good confession. So the first thing is regarding the choice, either choosing the Lord or not choosing the Lord. And that gets to us to the first commandment, right? I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. How many of us confess that we have violated the first commandment, the most important of all of the commandments? Probably, okay. Well, I didn't ask, that was rhetorical. We don't think about, like, we don't worship idols, right? You know, that was something that was from the past. So it is rarely confessed in the confessional. But we have to have a broader understanding of the word idol. An idol is anything that takes the place of God. Anything that takes the place of God. So anything that takes the place of finding ultimate meaning, satisfaction, security in life. And so, you know, riches, success, job, spouse, family, all of these even good things can become idols. So we end up having an unhealthy attachment to them. It's like we have to have them, and our happiness kind of depends upon them. And if things are not going well in this with this particular thing or this particular area, we're in distress. Another sign that we've made something an idol is that it consumes our thoughts. Saint Francis de Sales says we have a too eager desire for this thing. I looked in the Wichita Eagle yesterday, and they had an insert with the car show, and Father Curtis, he says he's going to go to the car show today. I said, just don't bring a car home, because he loves, you know, engines and motors. And just a week and a half ago, there was a boat sitting outside the rectory, so I was like, where did that come from? The neighbors brought a boat now. Well, that was Father Curtis. So, but it's easy to make, and I'm just, you know, joking around here, but it is easy to make, even, you know, any material thing into an idol. It's like what we want to invest ourselves in, what we want to give ourselves over. So consider, like, what consumes our thoughts? What gives us anxiety? There's probably an idol hidden in there, and that needs to be confessed. People have a hard time with the sacrament of confession because they struggle with the good examination of conscience, reviewing how and where the violations against the Lord come. And so often it just kind of gets reduced to, you know, sexual sins. You know, those are almost like the only kind of sins. Well, there's more serious sins than sexual sins, especially the first commandment of having gods other than the Lord our God, and vanity and pride. So a good examination of conscience. And it needs to start just like Joshua did with the people. Have we replaced the Lord our God with another God, with some sort of idol? You know, secularism, it's a philosophy, a way of life that seeks seeks meaning and significance without transcendence. So I can find my happiness here on earth. How many of us take on that kind of mentality? You know, where are we going to get our joy? What are we looking to taste and see? Is it the Lord or is it the things of this earth? That's a secular mentality. That's making creation, the created goods, into an idol. And so that's worthy of confession. Okay, so a good examination of conscience for a fruitful confession. And it begins by examining ourselves in relation to the first commandment, just like Joshua did with the people, all right? The second is that there's a choice. They get to freely choose whether they're going to be with the Lord or against the Lord. And so another essential component, element of the sacrament of confession, as the second graders will tell you as they prepare for the sacrament of confession, because they have to remember five things, is a firm purpose of amendment. Resolution not to sin anymore. So a commitment that I'm not going to follow this old way. I'm going to make a valiant effort. That's what Joshua is putting before the people. You're going to have to make a choice. And you're going to have to be determined to follow through on that choice, because you're going to be tempted to turn away again. And so kind of considering that in ourselves, of like when we use and receive the sacrament of confession, do we come with a firm purpose of amendment? We're really going to try not to commit that particular sin again. Now, does it happen that we have a firm purpose of amendment and we end up falling and committing the sin again? Absolutely, because sin is complicated, and we can have a firm purpose of amendment, you know, not to commit a particular sin. Maybe it's in the area of, say gluttony, right? But we can have attachments and compulsions and addictions that began with a particular sin, but then turn into an area where we have lost our freedom, right? And so it's still important that we keep confessing that sin, but we probably also need outside help, additional help, to overcome the areas where we have lost our freedom, you might say, through the compulsion or the addiction. You know, it might be, you know, there's a certain particular sin that we know that it's a sin, but we're not that sorry for. We don't really know if we want to change ourselves. We're not convinced, you might say. So it's kind of hard to have a firm purpose of amendment in that area, right? I like it, of course. We wouldn't commit a particular sin if we didn't like it, right? So there is something attractive and something tasteful about it. So we might find ourselves struggling to really believe that it's a good thing to have a firm purpose of amendment, to let this go, to turn away. I don't think we have to have absolute certainty and be absolutely convinced of the wrongness of the matter. We know that it's wrong, I mean, because that's what we've been taught, and that can be enough. Think about in the gospel, with the teaching on the Eucharist, and Jesus tells the apostles, are you going to leave too? And what does Peter say? Where else are we going to go? Okay, we don't understand this, we don't have clarity, but this is what's being taught. You have the words of eternal life. We're going to trust in that. And that's how they go forward. So they don't have, maybe we don't have the clarity in a particular area in our moral life. And so we don't feel like we have firm purpose of amendment. But we can still make firm purpose of amendment without having clarity. Just like the apostles. Where else are we going to go? I trust. You probably have heard the story of Mother Teresa. There was a man that came up to him and asked. He was discerning something. And he asked if she would pray that he could have clarity. We all want clarity, right? And she said, well, no, I won't pray that you have clarity, but I'll pray that you have trust. And she said, I rarely have clarity. So what's the most important thing for us? Ultimately, as we see, as it worked out through the Israelite people, it's a matter of trusting in the Lord, not necessarily of having absolute clarity. So we can gather and glean a lot from that first reading in helping us to make and receive and experience a fruitful confession. First of all, by examining ourselves relative to the first and most important commandment, whether we have replaced the Lord our God with other gods, with idols, things of this world. And the second, in making a firm purpose of amendment to change our life, to truly choose the Lord.